Chapter 32 of the book of Job. We're going to begin a new section. We deal with Elihu and Elihu's speeches. We'll talk more about that in a moment. Job chapter 31 concludes with the words of Job are ended. When we reach this point, Job has had his say. Job has, as it were, spent all of his breath. He's going to come back. He's going to speak a little bit more in chapter 42. He's going to speak long enough to say, I repent in sackcloth and ashes. Job is going to have learned some things by the time we reach that point. But he is going through the process of becoming a true individual. He's going through the process of coming into a right relationship with God. And it was true with Job, and it is true still with us, that for us to come to grips with God as individuals, as human beings, we, as it were, have to run out of steam. We have to come to the end of the line. We have to exhaust all of our human energy. We have to reach the point where we are no longer relying upon ourselves or thinking that we have the solution to all of our problems. And this is what Job has been going through, and now we reach the end of chapter 31, and it tells us simply that Job has reached this point. The words of Job are ended. The final response to his friends has been given. The final challenge to God has been made. And Job is now quiet. And that brings us a new character on the scene, a character by the name of Elihu. We'll talk in a moment about who Elihu is. We have a little more information about Elihu than we do the three friends. In fact, we have a little more information on Elihu than we do on Job himself, as far as his ancestry is concerned and some other things. Scholars have puzzled over Elihu. Who is this man? What does he bring to the conversation? What does he bring to the discussion between Job and his friends? And if you have read through Elihu's speeches or you have read some commentaries about Elihu, you recognize that the opinions on Elihu are about 180 degrees apart. Who is Elihu? Is he a young, brash individual who comes to the conversation with a cocksure attitude, who not only knows all of the questions, but who knows all of the answers, who dares to bring charges against his elders without really adding anything new to the conversation? There are some folks who will tell you that that's a perfect description of Elihu. On the other hand, there are some who will tell you that we ought to be more sympathetic to Elihu, because Elihu is really more sympathetic to Job and to Job's circumstance. And while it is true that he is young, and while it is true that in some respects he is brash, he brings more sympathy to Job's problem, and he does add a new and refreshing dimension to the discussion. And he does bring some suggestions, at least, to the discussions that had been overlooked by Job's friends and that had not been made by Job's friends. I'll just let you decide what you think about Elihu as we go through and read his speeches and read what he has to say and the approaches that he makes. There are a lot of questions that come to mind when we reach this point, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, we are introduced to Elihu. Where'd this boy come from? He is not mentioned in the prologue. As a matter of fact, he is not mentioned in the epilogue. The only place that we have Elihu in the book of Job is in these six chapters, 32 to 37. He makes his speeches and he is gone. As an interesting aside, as you're trying to make up your mind about what you think about Elihu, you might think about the fact that when we come to the end of the book of Job and God gets on Eliphaz by name and the other two friends and tells them to go and apologize to Job and let Job pray for him and offer some sacrifices for him, God doesn't include Elihu. Elihu does not even appear there. How well did Elihu know Job and his friend? How did Elihu find out about Job and his losses and his suffering and his predicament? How long had Elihu been sitting there and listening to what was going on? Did any of these previous speakers pay any attention to the presence of Elihu as he was waiting for his turn to speak? Were his words simply ignored? Or did Elihu speak so profoundly that he just brought an end to the discussion? Now, Job had somewhat to say to his friends. But as we read through the four speeches of Elihu, you will notice that Job makes no response at all. So let us see who this man is and what Elihu has to say. His speeches, as we say, began in chapter 32. They go through chapter 37. Verses 1 to 5 of chapter 32 contain an introduction in prose. Very little prose in the book of Job, but this introduction is in prose. Then these three men ceased answering Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. But the anger of Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite, and the family of Ram burned. Against Job his anger burned, because he justified himself before God. And his anger burned against his three friends because they had found no answer and yet had condemned Job. Now Elihu had waited to speak to Job because they were years older than he. And when Elihu saw that there was no answer in the mouth of the three men, his anger burned. Now, we don't know, as we said earlier, how long Elihu had been sitting there and listening to these speeches between Job and his three friends. But I suggest that maybe Elihu had been sitting there at least for a little while, because by the time his turn came, the Scripture tells us that Elihu was really churning on the inside. He was ready to go. He was tired of sitting there. He was tired of listening. He was ready to make his speech. The writer tells us why the three friends gave up. And it was because Job was righteous in his own eyes. But the anger of Elihu... And Elihu is a name that means, "He is my God." Good name for a man. He's identified by naming his father. His father is identified by giving the source of his ancestry. And if you go back into Genesis chapter 22 and 21... You find who Buzz was. He was the son of Nahor, the brother of Abraham. So when you go back and you decide and you start looking at this, it may well be that Elihu was a distant relative of Job. And that could be the reason that when we get down here just a little bit, we're going to hear Elihu address Job by his name. First time that's happened. The three friends never did. But Elihu refers to him as Job. He is of the family of Ram. Go back into the book of Ruth, chapter 4, about verse 19. You discover that Ram is one of the precursors of David, one of the ancestors of David. So it could be that Elihu is also in the lineage that gave us Jesus Christ. Now, obviously, there are other folks that could refer to, but it is an interesting possibility. So we have some knowledge about Elihu. And we're told that his anger burned. We are told at least three times that his anger burned. Verse 2, verse 3, verse 5. The author really wants us to know that Elihu was upset. Now, what got Elihu so upset? Why was he angry? Why was he mad at Job? He is frustrated. And he is upset, as Pat suggests, with Job because Job justified himself before God. That's verse 2. And he's upset with the friends, verse 3, because they had found no answer and yet had condemned Job. And here sits Elihu. And Elihu says, what's wrong with you guys? Why can't you? This is a fairly simple problem. And I have got the answer. I always get suspicious when somebody starts with, this is a fairly simple problem. Because a lot of problems are a lot more complex than we like to let on that they are. And there are more things we need to consider. But Elihu says, look, I've got the answers and I'm willing to give them to you. And I'm upset sitting here listening to you guys. One justifying himself before God and the others not able to answer him and take care of the situation and show Job what's wrong with him. Now, one thing that's very obvious here is that neither Job nor his friends nor Elihu could foresee the right solution to the problem. Notice, if you will, that the friends are saying, Job, you're wrong. Because you sinned and God's getting you for it. And Job was saying, no, I haven't sinned. Now, we'll talk in a moment. We've talked before that Job, when he says that, is not saying I've committed absolutely no sins at all. Job is saying I haven't done anything worthy of what's happening to me here. And he, in essence, was saying, God, you're wrong to do this to me. It's unfair. It's not right. I don't deserve this. Neither side can foresee a solution to the problem where either Job or God is not wrong. One of them has to be wrong. And what we're going to work through into the book is a solution where neither one of them is wrong. Job is Job and God is God. And we'll work through to that as we continue to study in the book of Job. But the problem they've got here is that neither can foresee a solution where, to state it positively, both God and Job turned out to be right. Now, Elihu had waited to speak to Job because they were years older than he. Now, Elihu was courteous, wasn't he? He waited. But his youthful modesty, it seems, was excelled only by his youthful assurance and exuberance. And that sometimes, if not always, characterizes young folks. I've learned that more as I've gotten older. Wasn't true when I was young. And when Elihu saw that there was no answer in the mouth of the three men, his anger burned. So now we've got the picture of Elihu. He's been sitting here, he's been listening, and I agree with Pat probably for a pretty good while, because he's going to quote some of the language of Job when we get down into his first speech. He has just been letting all of this boil up within him as he hears what's going on. He's disgusted with the three friends because they don't have enough wisdom to take care of Job, and he is now ready. And so in the rest of this chapter, if not listen to me, keep silent and I will teach you wisdom. That is a pretty good summary. And by the way, notice there that he doesn't say that you'll learn it from God or you'll learn it from wherever I will teach you wisdom. As a matter of fact, just read down through these introductory verses here. And one thing we discover right away is that Elihu has an I problem. I, my, me, mine. I haven't counted them, but somebody who did said that here in the opening verses, his early speech, he uses I, my, mine, etc. more than 50 times. Now, what does that tell you about Elihu? He's full of himself. He is pompous. He is characterized by being very verbose. In fact, get down to verse 18. For I am full of words. By the time we get to verse 18, believe me, nobody's going to question that. So Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite, spoke out and said, I am young in years and you are old. He starts with the same thought. Now, a lot of folks pick this up and say, well, this is getting repetitive and that just shows that Elihu is verbose, etc. But keep in mind that this is poetry. And one element of Hebrew poetry is repetition. So you would expect to find some repetition, and it doesn't necessarily all reflect on Elihu as much as it does on the style of the book itself, being in poetry. But he begins his apology for his intervention. And I use the word apology there not in its modern sense of I'm really sorry, I'm intervening, but apology in the sense of its original Greek derivation, which means his defense. His defense for his intervention. He really isn't sorry at all. He is defending his right to be here. I'm young in years, you are old. Therefore, I was shy and afraid to tell you what I think. Some translations use the word opinion there. Literally, it means knowledge. He doesn't profess to be giving opinions. He's telling them what he knows. And he professes to know and to have the solutions. I thought age should speak and increased years should teach wisdom. But it is the spirit in man and the breath of the Almighty gives them understanding. I thought age should speak, and increased years should teach wisdom. Do increased years teach wisdom? I'm getting some no's. I'm getting some yeses.
Teaches, it doesn't necessarily mean we learn.
It teaches. It doesn't necessarily mean we learn. The only certain thing we get is experience. How many of us, and I won't ask, have said, I'll ask, have heard somebody say, well, that's all right, just listen, son. When you get older, you'll understand. You'll be as smart and as wise as I am then. That's the implication, if not the statement. I never said that myself, did I, Eric? Do you want to ride home? As long as I buy his lunch, he'll answer anyway. But generally, we equate wisdom with age. And yet, how many of us have seen aged people who seemingly don't have enough sense to get out of the rain? And who have demonstrated that they don't have enough sense to handle the everyday affairs of their own lives, much less give advice to anybody else. Wisdom is not necessarily produced by age. As a matter of fact, it is not age that counts so much as it is maturity. And I've seen some young folks who are awfully mature, and I've seen some old folks who are awfully immature. You remember when Paul wrote to Timothy, 1 Timothy chapter 4, and I think around verse 12, he said, Timothy, let no man despise thy youth. Ordinarily, we expect wisdom to come with age. And if you see somebody with a bunch of gray hair, you think, boy, he's got to be really smart. May be. But may not be. And Elihu is making the point here. I thought age should speak. I gave deference to the years because increased years should teach wisdom. But it is God, he says in verse 8, that gives wisdom, and it doesn't necessarily come with age. Elihu is convinced that he had a message, and he's urging them to listen to it. You can almost hear his excitement in his language as he goes through here, and as this excitement and anger works through him. And as he tells these friends that they had miserably failed to convince Job that he was wrong, and they have admitted that they have failed by their silence. These three men ceased answering Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. He adds, the abundant in years may not be wise, nor may elders understand justice. So I say, listen to me. I will tell you what I think. You talk about a young man who is full of himself. We have come face to face with him. All right. Verse 11. Elihu continues his apology. Coming down through verse 22, he discusses the fact that since the friends have no answer, Elihu can no longer restrain himself from speaking. Behold, I waited for your words. I listened to your reasonings while you pondered what to say. I even paid close attention to you. Indeed, there was no one who refuted Job, not one of you who answered his words. Elihu says, I really have been sitting here. I've been listening. And if I were the referee, I would call this fight in favor of Job. Because I've heard what you've had to say, and nobody has refuted Job. You haven't been able to answer what he said. Now, don't say, we have found wisdom. God will rout him, not man. Don't you, friend, say that you have found wisdom in Job that is irrefutable. It's going to take God to answer him. Elihu is saying Job doesn't have invincible wisdom here. He doesn't have wisdom that only God can answer. For he has not arranged his words against me. He hasn't answered my arguments. Let me take care of Job. Nor will I reply to him with your arguments. I've got some new stuff to bring on the scene. Look very closely at those words. He has not arranged his words against me. What do you think Elihu is referring to there? When we get into a discussion with somebody and they are speaking, what are we usually doing? Listening? We're waiting until he gets through so we can talk. And while he speaks, we are arranging our words against him. We're thinking about what we're going to say. Oh, he'll never see this one coming. And we get that haymaker ready to bring around. That's what Elihu is saying. Job hasn't heard what I've got to say. He hasn't arranged his words against me. And I'm not going to go back against him with the same old tract that you guys use. They are dismayed. They answer no more. Words have failed them. And shall I wait because they do not speak? Because they stop and answer no more. Don't you get the picture of this young man? He's just full of bombast. And he's building it all up. You guys, you know, as Job told his friends, wisdom's not going to die with you. Elihu agrees with that. Got some of my own. Your arguments didn't get the job done. My arguments are really going to be good. He's building it up big, isn't he? Don't you just hate sometime when you're fixing to do something to get a really big, syrupy, pile it on, build it up introduction? Because by the time you get up there, people think, hey, this got to be, there's no way you can live up to it. I mean, whatever you do has to be a letdown. They're expecting a combination of Williams, Jennings, Bryan, and Clarence Darrah, and all they get is a Bill Clinton. I mean, you can't live up to it. And here is Elihu. He's giving his own introduction. Now, some introductions I've received, I wish I could have given them. Because I didn't think I was all that bad either. But Elihu's giving his own, and he's getting to say whatever he wants to about himself. I too will answer my share. I also will tell my opinion, for I am full of words. No kidding. That is really an apt description of Elihu. As one commentator said, by the time he got here, nobody doubted that. The spirit within constrains me. I've just got to speak. I can't hold it down anymore. Behold, my belly is like unvented wine, like new wineskins. It's about to burst. Let me speak that I may get relief. Let me open my lips and answer. Let me now be partial to no one, nor flatter any man. For I do not know how to flatter, else my Maker would soon take me away. He uses a figure of speech here to describe how he literally is bursting with what he has to say. And he uses a New Testament description of the gospel. You don't put the new wine in the old wineskin. He says, here, I'm just like a wineskin. It's about to burst. The only way I can get relief is to speak. What happens to wine when it gets old? What does it turn to? Vinegar. Don't you think there was a whole lot of vinegar in Elihu's wineskin? I don't think it was all wine. I think there was a lot of vinegar in Elihu's wine. He thought he had the problems. He thought he was gifted, and he's ready to share those gifts. Nothing wrong with that as long as you share them in the right way. In fact, gifts are God-given, aren't they? And God gives gifts for the church. I think we misunderstand a lot. We talk about God giving gifts to people. Talents in our day and age. But I think God doesn't give gifts so much to people as He gives them through people. Because whatever God gives, talents otherwise, is given for the greater good of the body of Jesus Christ. And you and I need to so use them. Elihu is going to speak. He's going to speak plainly. He's going to speak without flattery. He's going to speak without respect of persons. He's going to speak next week. Because there is the first bell. And I think we'll just restrain ourselves. You didn't think I could do that, did you? Instead of starting chapter 33... read through, if you will, for next Lord's Day morning, through chapter 37. And you'll get there, the four speeches of Elihu. And that'll take us up to chapter 38, Jehovah and Job. Each of these chapters can be seen to have a particular theme. God is not silent, God is not unjust, etc. So as you read through them, look for those themes that Elihu brings to his speech. All the responsibility is not on the speaker, is it? And people feel compelled to speak for different reasons. Some because the Word of God is within them, some because they just got acid indigestion and vinegar. And they mistake what is going on. All right, even the fool, when he holds his peace, is counted wise. Abraham Lincoln paraphrased that. It's better to keep silent and let men think you a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. With that, we will conclude, and I will close my mouth.